Log Talk Radio.
Well, good evening, Sports City. We are now at the doorstep of Saturday. That's right. It's Friday. Y'all already know this is my favorite day of the week. I ain't going to lie, because I'm getting ready for a whole bunch of a sports extravaganza. It's your boy TP Timeless. We had an epic show last night. The Crossover Cafe is back in session. We now have five faces at the Crossover Cafe. Crazy stuff last night. Even have Slam Magazine author in the building with the show. Sports City, I'm on myself again. I'm back. I had to get it talking by my big brother. Chandler told me to get back in this ring and throw rights and lefts. So I done took off this blazer, loosened up the tie, stepped aside. The Kitchen Timeless is alive.
One, two. Check me out right here, yo.
Yo, the sun don't shine forever, but as long as it's here, then we might as well shine together. Better now than never, business before pleasure. P. Diddy and the fam, who you know do it better. Yeah, right, no matter what, be airtight. So when you hear something, make sure you hear it right. Don't make an ass out of yourself by assuming our music keeps you moving. What are you proving? You know that I'm two levels above you, baby. Talk me, baby, I'ma make you love me, baby. Talking crazy ain't gonna get you nothing but choke. And that jealousy is only gonna leave you broke. So the only thing left now is God for the tap. And babe, you know you're too hard for these cats. I'ma win cause I'm too smart for these cats. While they making up facts, you making up slack.
In the commission, you ask for permission to hit him. He don't like me, him and Wild Wife, he was with him. You heard of us, the murderer, smooth shady. Been on the low lately, the feds hate me. The son of me, they say my killing's too blatant. You hesitating, I'm in your mama crib waiting.
Okay, Chris. Rest in peace, Chris. Rest in peace, Chris. The calling number is 917-889-9592. You got the next 60 minutes or more, because I feel like since how stuff went down last night, we carried in the OT. A lot of these shows now that we back in the kitchen full throttle, the bird month, September, October, November, December. These months come around. And I get the goosebumps because I know my sports is back. Like, well, all throughout the year, my sports are here. But, you know, you got football, baseball, basketball coming around the corner, hockey, man, everything coming, man. So y'all stay focused, man. Sports City got a lot of stuff going on. We back. Okay, let me get into this as best as I can. I had something to tell y'all at the top of the show, but I think I can save it throughout the duration of the show because I got a lot of stuff to kick into. As we best see fit here at Sports City, my brother, my co-host, my hype up guy, my adrenaline rush, tell me to get back in his kitchen, stop playing with these dudes. Oh, that's what I want to say. That's what I want to say before I let my brother in here. I live here. I ain't gonna lie. I'm gonna let y'all know the location. Well, y'all know the location if y'all around Sports City. I live here in Connecticut, and my other big brother, co-host of the Crossover Cafe, sent me a little inkling about what was going on here in the state of Connecticut with the His and Her show on ESPN, because we share the state together. And I finally heard the clip of them saying they're cooking. They are cooking. I heard it. So my big brother Royce, a.k.a. Arkeezy, good looking out. I heard Jamel and Mike Smith saying it. Look, if y'all want to take our slogan, y'all come in here to do what we do. Like say y'all heard it from your boy Timeless. Or say you heard it from Slim Chef. Give somebody some love. I don't even have to take it all. I don't. But we'll get into it. That was on the top of my head. Royce hit me up, gave me the link. I seen what was going on after he said it last night in the kitchen. Okay. My adrenaline rush, like I said, my big brother co-host of the round table today, Chandler Knight, a.k.a. Nostradamus. Welcome to the table. How are you feeling this evening?
I'm all right, man. I'm just I'm trying to understand these people who are fans of 17 teams who want to talk about other people's teams when their team is in the basement. Yes, Matt, I'm talking about you.
Hey, I'm trying to ask if you are right, man. I ain't trying to look. I ain't pointing no fingers. Like, my boys are too close to try and make it to the doorstep of the postseason. I'm chilling. I'm trying not to talk no junk. Because Karma knows my name, so I'm chilling. But I guess, Matt, they are calling for you in the kitchen. I know that you keep your ear out, at least for me. I guess at least you're looking for me. Sports City, buckle up for this one. We got a normal face around here that y'all ain't seen in quite a while. Y'all got to wake him up, man. Y'all got to feel some type of way for my little brother here. Aaron Simmons, welcome to the roundtable. How are you feeling this evening?
Damn, this was good to be back home, man. Damn, this was good to be back home. And I come back and I see my man Chandler calling some cats out. Some shit ain't never changed, man. So it's good to be back. Good.
Look, and he come back in here cursing. Like this is what I'm talking about, people, man. Look. If y'all was to go, like, on the border, like, Virginia, Maryland area, you know, D.C., and go request the Simmons family, yo, they're good, you know, well-knit family. You know what I'm saying? I done seen them. I seen from Preston to Aaron, you know what I'm saying, to Papa to Leah, you know what I'm saying? Everybody good. And then once Aaron come to the kitchen, he start acting all sailorish, you know what I'm saying? He want to curse like himself. Hey, it's okay.
I said one word. Pipe down, playboy. God is good.
It's okay.
You still working
on
me.
It's too late. Don't try to bring God in here now. Listen, I don't reference those family. I know from Mama to Papa Simmons, from Preston and Leah. I know all of them. Everybody good people. Now Aaron come here. And had his head down. Now he's laughing because this is what we gonna cuckoo and kiki about. This is what we gonna do. Okay. Well, city, no problem. Like I said, the call number is 917-889-9592. I know my little brother going through some stuff, so I'm glad I got him laughing. That's all I need. I made my day. I can end the show right now. You know what? We gonna end the show right now. Let's go. No, I ain't playing. Okay. All right. I won't do it. I'm playing. Okay, so. We had a game last night. I know we got a lot of stuff to talk about. Trevor told me we got a couple things to hit on, too. So I'm going to try and get myself out of the way as best as I can, even though I know I probably won't. But I'm feeling some type of way about this game last night. Now, the Kansas City Chiefs hosted the Denver Broncos. And I'm not going to lie, before the game started, we had the basketball show, so we couldn't really get in-depth about the game that went down. But as the game was coming around, I'm like, Kansas City has a tough time dealing with Peyton and not for nothing. This is the crazy part. The Denver Broncos entering this game had a 12-game winning streak within the division. Nobody in that division has stopped the Broncos for the past 2 years since Peyton has been there. And I still don't see the Chiefs being able to deal with them. But the interesting thing about the Kansas City Chiefs, the Chiefs are actually coming off of a road win up against a Houston Texans team, let alone a defense that I was actually kind of hyping up. And people around Sports City was like, chill out on Houston. Don't sip that Kool-Aid, Ty. I'm like, well, you know, J.J. Watt and Will Fork and Cushing, all these guys, they should be able to get it done. But they were like, guess what about the offense? And I was like, that's a big question mark. You know what I'm saying? So it was an interesting game, but I'm like, you know, before this game pops off, I really feel Denver has a leg up on Kansas City. Well, I was proven wrong because Kansas City actually was giving Denver an interesting fight all throughout the game. It wasn't even one phase of the game or one half. They were actually playing a legit game. And then the interesting portion comes where here goes the magic or the mystique of Peyton Manning. Even though everybody questions if he could make a decent 30-yard pass because he's throwing ducks, so on and so forth, but he could rip the short side of a field up. So he was making that adjustment, had that two-minute drill, scored the touchdown. They tie it up. And then that lowly situation happens where they put the game in Alex Smith's hands. First play of the drive, they don't even let him pass the ball, start this offense up. They hand the ball off. Easy little handoff up the middle thing. Nothing's going to happen. As soon as his body gets ready to touch the ground, being Jamal Charles, one of the top five running backs being picked in fantasy leagues. So I wanted to get him, couldn't get him. He fumbles. To the house, touchdown, the Broncos go up after being down and tying it up. Now, this is just a funny turn of events. One, the Chiefs were playing a good game. They could not stop the third down play of Peyton Manning to Emmanuel Sanders. I don't know how Emmanuel Sanders turned it to a T.O. Randy Moss, Jerry Rice-esque situation where they can't stop him, but Peyton was hitting them. Question marks about this defense right now, especially the way that they came out of week one, winning a game on the road, coming back to Arrowhead and losing a very tight game to a Peyton Manning-led Broncos team. And two, from what you guys seen, and really, from you know, on the defensive spectrum, they won the game again on the defensive side. Last week it was Tlaib with the interception pick six, and this week it was a fumble and return for a touchdown as well. And you're not really seeing that strong effort out of Peyton Manning. So I want to see how you guys feel about Peyton Manning. Do you think he's, like, going through the motions, or is this Father Time basically tapping Peyton on the shoulder, letting him know that his sand in the hourglass is running out? But I want to see how you guys feel about all in all, every topic that I hit on. Let's have at it, man. It's the round table, man. Terrence, I'm going to wake you up first. Your thoughts on this game and how things elapsed in this Thursday night match.
You know, honestly, man, and it's kind of funny when, you know, open up with this particular game, you know, when you stop and actually look at what the Denver Broncos have been able to do the first 2 weeks of the season, if you're a fantasy owner of any of the Denver Broncos, you're pissed. Because, honestly, you know, Peyton Manning really isn't throwing up, you know, gaudy-type numbers. You know, C.J. Anderson, Barney Hillman, these are backs that, you know, you counted on to produce a significant amount of points for you, and you just don't get it done. Defensively, Wade Phillips has these guys flying around the ball, making plays. DeMarcus Ware seems to be right back, plugged in with a coordinator that he's familiar with from his days when they were members of the Dallas Cowboys together. So you got to like this defense. But, you know, to answer the last part of your question about Father Time, Captain Peyton on the shoulder, it's very evident. It's very, very evident. However, given, you know, 2 minutes left to go, you need some points, I think I would still try Peyton and his you know, weak arm out there more than I would, you know, trot, you know, anybody else at this point. Cause I mean, he just had done it, but, you know, Father Time is definitely tapping Peyton on his arm, and letting him know that it's, you know, that the hourglass is almost up. Also, the offensive line play from the Denver Broncos is not at all helping them out. You know, last week, if you look at how the Baltimore Ravens were able to just pretty much bring pressure with four bodies, and it wasn't really exotic blitzes all the time. I mean, honestly, it was straight D lineman stunts, you know, and they were just not casting those off or making the proper checks. And Peyton Manning, you know, in two games has given up almost 8 sacks, and he's gone half a season without giving up that much in years past. So the offensive line for the Denver Broncos is not, you know, helping his case at all. But, again, if you're Denver, you got to be impressed with being able to start the season 0-2, going on the road in a very hostile environment with the back up against the wall being down for all of 34 seconds of that ball game and finding a way to will your team to a victory. You know, if you're a Denver Broncos fan, that has to be somewhat encouraging. But, you know, Father Time is catching up with Peyton Manning. You got to solve your offensive line issues because, again, if you can't run the rock, you know, when it gets down to November and December, Peyton's arm's going to fail you once again, and it's going to be that much worse. If you're the Kansas City Chiefs, it's very difficult for me to say don't hang your head. Because you played well enough to win, but damn it, hang your head because you also played well enough to lose. Let's keep in mind, Alex Smith had 2 turnovers. They turned the ball over 4 times, 2 via fumble, 2 via Alex Smith's arm. The dude had a QBR of 58.6, if my memory is correct. So Captain Checkdown was not able to get the ball into the end zone via the pass yet again. And so I'm not too sure what's going on with Alex Smith. I mean, we sit here on the show and on other shows and, you know, listen to other networks, and they praise Alex Smith for being a quote-unquote game manager. He's only doing what Andy Reid is allowing him to do, this, that, and the third. At the end of the day, you're a quarterback. You throw touchdowns. You put your team in position to win ball games and not turn the ball over at the clip that he did last night. So the defense for the Kansas City Chiefs, in my opinion, played well. By the way, shout out to Eric Berry for coming back. That gave me goosebumps when I saw that. You know, I mean, just having 2 now run through that tunnel, and being a member of the pregame celebrations and being a member The Kansas City Chiefs, you know, 53-man, it's spectacular based on what he's gone through. But, you know, the Kansas City Chiefs defense did exceptionally well. You know, blitzing Peyton Manning, making things difficult for that Denver Broncos offensive line, which I spoke about earlier. But, again, you can't let that game get away. You know, I played running back, you know.
Wait, before you keep going. You said the Kansas City Chiefs defense was doing well, right? They had about 7 or 8 completions on third down to Emmanuel Sanders, talking about not knowing where the ball was going. They knew where it was going, and they couldn't stop it. They could not stop Emmanuel Sanders.
Here's my thing about stopping Emmanuel Sanders, okay? You know, when the Kansas City Chiefs looked at the game film, yes, 10 found a way to get open. I will give you that. That's about saying, you know what, we're going to stop 84 from the Steelers. And people know, going into game planning versus the Steelers, you know you got to stop Antonio Brown. You know you got to stop Calvin Johnson. These are cats that you know you have to stop. They just make good plays. At the end of the day, they get paid as well. But when you start blitzing and making things one-dimensional for our offense and sacking, you know, Peyton Manning, unless they sacked them, and keeping them pretty much, you know, scoreless for the better part of the first quarter until, you know, the defense turned the ball over and got the pick six in the second and the third for the Denver Broncos, you know, at the end of the day, the Kansas City Chiefs did all they could do defensively, you know. But at the end of the day, you know what I'm saying, you're Jamaal Charles. You know, again, we're going to nitpick this game until probably Sunday when we start talking about Sunday's games, but you've got to protect that rock. You got to protect that rock. There's no doubt about it. I don't understand why you're going to protect that rock. So, at the end of the day, man, again, the Broncos are 2-0. Kansas City's 1-1. They got a difficult game against the Green Bay Packers coming up next week. It's going to be interesting for Kansas City Chiefs moving forward.
Okay, well, let's start this kitchen up, man. Chandler, your thoughts on what went down? Do you agree with what Sirius threw out there? Also, I'm not going to lie. I put Peyton in a lot of the top quarterback discussions, but he is really looking like he is either slowing down or breaking down. I don't know which, you know, analogy I want to use to break it down, but it's something that he's more or less settling for the short pass, more like his brother Eli. Eli's more effective throwing the short passes, and everybody is questioning that arm. Your thoughts on both sides of the ball with Denver or Kansas City? And your thoughts on the fumble as well. I know Sirius probably wanted to talk more about that fumble as well, but your thoughts on Jamaal Charles. And he fumbled twice and lost both of them, but the last one couldn't be more clear-cut of a problematic situation. I don't want to put it all on his shoulders, but, I mean, that was the deciding factor to win the game.
You mean LeBron Charles? Right? You mean LeBron Charles, right?
That's right. I forgot he said that.
I didn't forget at all. This is what happens when you want to proclaim yourself something. This is what happens, Jamaal Charles. Oh, LeBron games in the NFL, Jamaal Charles. You were supposed to carry that team all by yourself. You LeBron James. You LeBron. Right. What happens, LeBron? You bum. Listen, Peyton Manning ain't slowing down. The fact of the matter is, I keep telling you, this offense does not fit him. This is an offense that he has to follow the rules, follow what the coach says, and not do his own thing. That doesn't work for him. He looks unsure. He looks indecisive. His offensive line, they have to think now. They're thinking and have to think about what they're doing. Remember, this is a new offense. What is the first unit that is impacted the most in a new offense? The offensive line. They went from shotgun all the time to now actually having to pass block and run block, and they can't run block to save their life, and they certainly can't pass block. Peyton has always been a statue, always. So now he's getting hit more because his offensive line is terrible. They can't run the ball, and he's thinking about what plays to run. Second half of the game, what happened? They went shotgun. Funny enough, the offense started moving. All of a sudden, now Emmanuel Sanders morphs back into one of the best receivers in the NFL. This is not rocket science, people. It's really not. I know everybody tries to make it all deep and mysterious and all in Father Time and
blitzes and stunts. Football is a real simple game. Block the guy in front of you, catch the ball when it's thrown to you, hit the guy who catches the ball. It's real simple. They can't block. Peyton can't pass. Why can't he pass? Because he's catching brain lock in this system. I told you beginning week one, you were going to see Peyton Manning look terrible. Because he looked terrible through six quarters of football. Through six quarters of football, he looked terrible. Last two, he looked good. Why? Because it went back to the shotgun. It went back to running the Peyton Manning offense. The Broncos are going to struggle this year if Gary Kubiak insists on running his offense. And not for nothing, the only way that he's going to manage to keep Peyton Manning healthy to the end of the season is to run his offense. Because Peyton Manning's arm is going to give out before the end of the season. But they can't run the ball. Kansas City, you had a game gift wrapped for you and you gave it away. Jamal Charles, you did not say another word the rest of your career. Not the rest of the season. The rest of your career. I'm the LeBron James in the NFL. How'd that work out for you, B? How'd that work out for you? Oh, that's right. You put it on. You really thought you were LeBron James. Tried to dribble the ball, right? You really thought you was LeBron. I'm going to dribble the ball through the line. Yeah, okay. This game is all about the fact that Broncos need to figure out what they're going to do on offense, and Jamal Charles needs to shut up and get back to running the ball and stop trying to be something he's not.
Now, I mean, is it right? Can I say this before I move around the kitchen even more? Is it right that they started that drive up, giving him the ball out of the backfield to already start the clock up? I mean, shouldn't they have thrown, and knowing Andy Reid is the king of halfback screens, I mean, when he had Westbrook out there in Philly, that's all he did. You knew Westbrook was going to get a screen at least 5 to 7 times a game when Donovan McNabb was with him. Now all of a sudden you got a quarterback, to me, I mean, people may feel differently, that's worse than Donovan McNabb, that you don't trust to make passes downfield, but yet you're questionable about what his situation may be on the field as well. And you start the clock off. Whether he hangs on to the ball, the clock is going to continue to run. Wouldn't you try to be effective knowing that you got to at least get at least a good 40 to 60 yards downfield to be in field goal range to, kind of get this ball moving? You know what I'm saying? At least to me. Because
your quarterback is Alex Smith. Why do you guys insist on trying to act like Alex Smith is something he's not? Alex Smith doesn't throw the ball down the field. Alex Smith doesn't throw the ball down the field. Alex Smith does not throw the ball down the field. I speak seven languages. Which one do you want me to say it in for you? Okay? he's the same guy he's been his entire career. You suddenly, why, what? See, this is what pisses me off with football fans and these ridiculous so-called experts. This is who he was in college. This is who he's been in the NFL for 7 years. He's been in the league at least 7 years, I believe. This is who he's been.
More.
No. You're not going to throw the ball down the field with Alex Smith. You're not going to lead a late-game drive because he's going to check it down. You don't have enough time for him to check down the field. So what do? You give it to your bell cow back, and you say, okay, Jamal, if you break one, great. If you break it, great. We get in the field goal range, we kick the field goal, we win. If not, they were playing for overtime, Ty. They were playing for overtime, especially the way that Peyton Manning looked and they knew they could get to him. They knew the worst that could happen was Denver would kick a field goal, then they would get the ball back. Remember, it's new overtime rules. It's new overtime rules. So you're basically guaranteed to get the ball back as long as you don't give up a touchdown. Peyton Manning wasn't going to drive down the field and get a touchdown on them. So
Let me ask you a question, though, Chandler. If you're playing for overtime, Denver had no timeouts. Why not take the knee there?
Again, with Jamal Charles, who can break a run at any given moment. I think that was going to be the only run of the series. I think that was going to be the only run. Think Andy Reid, because Andy Reid's a gambler, he said, I'm going to give it to him, I'm going to take a shot. If he breaks it, great. If he gets 2 or 3 yards, we're taking a knee and we're done. Because the last thing Andy Reid expected was for him to put the ball on the ground. And I don't have a problem. I don't have a problem with the strategy. I don't have a problem with it. Jamal Charles, we all know at any given moment can break a run. Now, if this was Chris Ivory or some, you know, basically pedestrian back. I'm not dissing Chris Ivory, but he's not on that level. But if this was some pedestrian back, then you take the knee or you take one shot throwing down the field. But with a Adrian Peterson, a Jamal Charles, well, it's not that many of them. It's one more back, I think, a LeSean McCoy maybe. You take a shot at him breaking a big run, and then you take the knee. The thought process was sound, and if anybody's ever watched Andy Reid with that amount of time on the clock, what has he always done, even in Philly? What did he do? He ran the ball. Remember, he ran the ball. Even with Donovan, he ran the ball. He didn't pass. He ran. You got to remember who the coach is. You can't just talk about it because that's what you wanted them to do, what you would have done. Look at who the coach is. That run did not surprise me at all. The only thing that – and it didn't surprise me, Jamal Charles coughed it up. Either, to be quite honest with you, because he's done that a lot. Jamal Charles, if you look at his career, has put the ball on the ground at some of the biggest moments when his team needed him not to. So they got it is what it is.
Okay, well, we do have somebody here in the kitchen and probably getting their tail here. Mr. Silver, welcome to the round table. How are we feeling this evening? Mr. Silver, are you with us?
Yeah. Phone was locked and muted and all good stuff, you know. Let's just jump right into it. We were talking about the Chiefs or Broncos or both or which side or where do you want to start?
I mean, it's the round table. Come eat.
All right, let's do this. All right, first off, Chiefs, they are who they are. You know, we've seen what Alex Smith can and cannot do on the field. We know Jamal Charles, and, you know, if you didn't know Chandler, now let you know he's going to put the ball on the ground. You know, the interceptions, whether, you know, I don't know if they were ill-advised throws or, you know, he's looking them off the correct way. You know, when I watched him in real time, it just looked like a throw that the corners made a great play on. But, you know, it is what it is. Like you said, he's not going to throw the ball down the field. So if you know that, you're obviously going to jump on those short passes more often than not knowing you're playing Alex Smith. So I wasn't thoroughly surprised by the Chiefs coughing up the lead, giving the game up. What I was more, you know, questioning, so to speak, was what's going to happen in the future for the Denver Broncos as it pertains to this offense. Now, Chandler just said, it's all Kubiak and Manning. Those two have two different ways of playing football. One win playoff games in a Super Bowl. The other has never won anything. So I'm pretty sure Peyton would rather stick to his way of playing the ball, which got him three touchdowns in the win. Well, I don't know if you can say it got him the win because he didn't do anything for the fumble, but he did get the team the touchdowns in that position to be tied. So, you know, with his offense, going in the shotgun, you know, changing the play at will, audibly moving people around, letting the offensive line know what they're supposed to do so they don't have to think on their own, things of that nature. It got them in the game. We all know, you know, this goes into the whole Kubiak, Elway, and Manning thing. Whose side is Elway really on? Is he on Manning's? Is he with Kubiak? We all know they got drafted the same year. You know, they spent time on the Broncos together. He was his old coordinator and things of that nature. So we know the relationship between John Elway and Gary Kubiak is pretty tight. The guy who's their quarterback, I don't know if it's as tight as it used to be between Elway and Manning. I think Elway watching that ball sail over his head playing Seattle in the Super Bowl, I think Elway's kind of stepped back from full supporting Manning, but that's another issue. I think that next week is going to be hard-pressed for them against Detroit, an offense who can throw the ball, who can run the ball. And, you know, for all intents and purposes right now, Ameer Abdullah looks like he could, you know, do everything. And against this defense, I think they can, you know, put up some points. And it's going to be interesting to see if they start off with Kubiak's offense again and it goes to another pick or they're down early, you know, they go back to Peyton. But I'm really with Chandler on this. I think the fact that he threw one pick at the beginning of the game, people want to jump on his back. I know Twitter was blowing up on how he should retire and the game's passed him up and this and that and, you know, whatever. The fact of the matter is he can still get the ball to the receivers when he needs to. He can put receivers in places that most quarterbacks can't. And that's just a skill that can't be taught. And the fact that he can do that, he can throw a duck, he can throw a lane ball, as long as it's in the right spot at the right time, it's really irrelevant how the ball gets there as long as it gets there. So I think Peyton just really has to figure out how he's going to, I guess you could say, help Kubiak if they're going to work together, because who knows if, you know, they start off with Peyton, you know, shotgun next week and they're down again. Now they go to Kubiak's and they get down even worse, or vice versa. It's going to be very interesting who gets the blame, so to speak, because we all know what Manning likes to do on the field as a leader, and we all know what Kubiak's offense does to Peyton Manning. You know, what was it? Ridiculously low completions and one interception. Then when he went to the shotgun, we saw what happened. So the Broncos offensively are very, very scary, and are very, very scared in the fact that if you're a fan, that you It's very, very scary if you're a Broncos fan, because this offense has not been consistent at all. And, I mean, you could say for a half, but they were even shoddy in that second half sometimes. So it just – I really don't know consistently if they're going to be able to score points and depend on this defense to bail them out, because, you know, I don't know if this defense is really that great. But, you know, Alex Smith and Jamal Charles are just that bad. It really comes down to that. And I would have to think the latter. I think Alex Smith and Jamal Charles are just that bad and coughed it up when they shouldn't have. So I really wasn't impressed by it, especially Denver. I mean, to me, they are the weakest 2-0 team I've seen in a long time. The way the Ravens, you know, got in there, that offense only putting up 9 points to this week. The way they looked in the first half and how different the offense looked from Kubiak to Manning. And, you know, I don't see Kubiak getting fired for Manning anytime soon. So they're going to have to figure out how to make it work.
I'm going to say this. I actually disagree with you to a certain extent. I mean, actually, Chandler started off saying that you were going to see the Broncos look horrible. So I don't know about the scary part or what you see with this offense. If Peyton didn't get it together in that third and fourth quarter, this is a whole different discussion. And also, like, let's be real here. The Chiefs do have an interesting front seven, if you want to be interested in sending that pressure. But their secondary, and I don't even want to tie Eric Berry into this because my heart is with Eric Berry, but he's included in the secondary. They couldn't figure out how to at least bracket cover Emmanuel Sanders. He beat him for more than 7 pass plays on third down to get the chains moved. But what's going on that sideline? What are you guys doing? What are you guys talking about? Because he didn't even go to a tight end right there. He could have went to Owen Daniels if he wanted to, if that presented itself. He knew that they could not slow down, stop, or cover Emmanuel Sanders. That offense did not, you know, sparkle or glare out to me at anything. So I disagree. If you get a defense that can sit in pressure, play decent coverage, I don't want to say lockdown coverage because it's going to be very rare that you get everything together. It's very rare. But if they can do that to Peyton Manning, it's going to be tough. And just like Chandler also said, that offensive line was not protecting, not blocking at all, run or pass, which made it tough for them to get things done. So it you know, it's a juggle situation. At the end of the day, like I said, if you're going to give Peyton, and I'm going to be honest here, if you're going to give Peyton anything from 2 yards out to 17, he can hurt you. If you guys are playing tight coverage and making him, you know, pass up the coverage and extending that receiver to a safety help and making Peyton have to fit it into a window, that's manageable for a defense. I want to see Peyton make that completion, because if he is, he's overthrowing his dudes or he's underthrowing them. Like, he's not as accurate as he once was back in the day when he wore blue and white. So, yeah, the Chiefs, they had this game in their hands. Like I said, I know this is going to be more the mantra of this game about the fumble with Jamal Charles, but I'm not up here sitting up here angry for Peyton to retire. I'm just saying it's father time tapping him on the shoulder, because I'm not going to lie, I'm not the biggest Peyton Manning fan, but I respect the hell out of him. If he sees 100 yards of football field, I don't care what nobody says, he can get the job done. When they scored and went up a touchdown, I looked at the clock. I think it was like 2 minutes and 30 or 2 minutes and 50 seconds on the clock. I said, that's too much time for Pickens. That is too much time. Like it wasn't even me saying that's enough time. I said that's too much time. And sure enough, they scored the touchdown, but didn't nobody think the outcome would be them getting the ball back and fumbling on the first play and then, you know, being a touchdown after the recovery. So, you know, in itself, we could have seen a 1-1 Denver Broncos team. Hell, I mean, if the Ravens offense came to play, this is something that Chandler was talking about with me previously. If the Ravens came to play ball, shoot, I mean, the Broncos could have been 0-2 out of the gate. I mean, they're fortunate that their record is what it is right now, to say the least. So I disagree to an extent on that, the scary feature that you throw out. Anything else outside of the game or which was mentioned before we move away from it? Okay, the silence helps me. Next interesting situation I want to get to as of this upcoming weekend. Just pegged as of today, Johnny Manziel is pegged as the starting quarterback for the Cleveland Browns as they go home up against the Tennessee Titans. Now, here goes another game where it's Heisman versus Heisman and Johnny Manziel and Mariota going at it. One, do you think you see a different game? Or two, do you think Mariota gets to light it up again up against a defense where we feel he could, you know, put these type of points up? People don't think that he could get up 42 points, throw four touchdowns, so on and so forth. Now, I thought Tampa Bay's defense would be different, but the secondary is in question to me. I want to see how you guys feel about this matchup, especially with Johnny Football getting the start fresh out of the gate. Nacho, I'll start off with you first. Your thoughts on this matchup and Johnny Football being pegged the starter for the Browns.
You know, what's even more interesting is the fact that Josh McCown went through an entire week without any concussion symptoms. So this, you know, this is furthermore proving that they really, really want Johnny Manziel on the field, regardless of any of his growth or not. They want to make the money. With that being said, as it pertains to the X's and O's on the field, this defense for Cleveland, without scrying anymore, without pretty much, you know, with the youngster of Shelton, I don't see this defense being able to be overwhelming for the rookie in Mariota. I think he should be able to get the job done. I don't expect him to do anything like he did in week one. There is no expectation of two touchdowns, a great passer rating or completion percentage, a great completion percentage and, you know, no interceptions. I don't foresee that. You know, can it be done? Obviously, the kid has shown in 1 week that he's pretty good at the NFL level against the defense last year. You know, that was pretty good. This year was supposed to be just as good, if not even better. You know, and it was supposed to be something to carry that team. The fact of the matter is Mariota shredded that defense. I know he only passed the ball 16 times, completed 13, four touchdowns for 208. So it wasn't, you know, gaudy in the fact that it was, you know, 20-some-odd, 30-some-odd passes, 400 or 500 yards, things of that nature. But it was consistent. It was consistent play and progression I've seen from Mariota throughout the game. So I anticipate him being able to do well against this Cleveland defense. I think this is the game where he might give up the rookie, show a little bit of the rookie inside of him. He might make an ill-advised pass. I think this might be the game that happens. But I think it's going to be Johnny Manziel against that Titans defense. They were able to, you know, rattle the other rookie in Winston last week, get him for a couple picks, a pick six. So if they can be, you know, with a win like that, with seeing your rookie quarterback do that, that can lift the defense's confidence. They could play to another level that they on paper may not, you know, may not say they can play to. But I don't know if they're going to be able to, you know, like I said, scare Johnny Manziel. Now, he, for all intents and purposes, as it pertains to games played, he's still in his rookie year. I know this is his second year, but he hasn't played a full 16 yet. So I don't think he's fully into that second year. especially with the rehab and leaving the team and coming back. So I think this is going to be an interesting game. As it pertains to the quarterbacks, I think they're evenly matched. They're both guys that can run the ball. They're both guys that can make things happen. I give the slight edge to Mariota just because he seems to have it already. That calm, cool demeanor to dissect the field as well as he can as a rookie and get the job done. And he doesn't seem to want to make the big mistake that he's making the right decisions and doing the right thing that I like to see from him. So I like Tennessee. I think Tennessee's defense plays with more confidence because of the fact of Mariota. And they do more than, like I said, on paper. And I like Tennessee and Mariota to have a better game than Johnny Manziel in Cleveland. I expect Johnny Manziel to have a good game as also, but I know he's that risk taker, that gunslinger, so to speak, that guy who doesn't give a dang. He can get the ball up there and get it to someone, so he'll try that if he can. And I think that, you know, that may cost him an interception at a costly time. So I'm going to give the slight edge to Mariota and the Titans.
Okay, before I throw it to Chandler, your thoughts on the efforts that Johnny could bring to the game for this Cleveland Browns offense?
I mean, we saw it last week. The fact that he was able to come in and make a big spark, get the touchdown, and then try to do what he did in the whole game in itself, I just think that he's going to be able to bring that spark. I think the whole team, when he came in, it felt to me the whole team kind of got uplifted, whether or not, you know, it was because they feel he's the best or they feel it was a great change. He's a great change of pace, you know, personality to have in the huddle. So maybe that's it. But the fact to me is I think this team responded well, and I think him being on the field, they'll be able to play a little better. I just give more, you know, like I said, Mariota is just showing it to me. The coolness that Mariota has come out, I think it's going to take over. But I don't think we're going to be leaving this game with Johnny Manziel thinking he's digressed in any way. I think we're going to see some good progression.
Okay, Chandler, your thoughts on the part two of the Heisman matchup with Mariota going up against this Cleveland Browns team. Do you think Mariota could actually have a successful week two fresh out of the gate in his rookie campaign? Or do you think Johnny Manziel gets his first start win for the Cleveland Browns this season, 2015-2016?
Is Mariota going to be playing the Tampa Bay Buccaneers defense again? Because if he is, he'll never lose a game in his career. Can we stop with the Marcus Mariota nonsense? He played one game against a terrible team. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers are terrible. They're terrible. Terrible. Not just they're terrible. Okay? Terrible. They let a rookie quarterback. First of all, they got no push up front. You got Gerald McCoy on your defensive front. You can't get a push on a rookie quarterback. You played a vanilla defense against a rookie quarterback, and oh my goodness, the rookie quarterback actually was successful against a vanilla defense. You got no secondary. Your offensive line is comprised of me and a 90-year-old guy in a wheelchair. Tampa Bay's terrible. So can we start with, he's showing so much. He played one game. What the hell can he show you in one game, especially against a bad team? Stop. Stop. He's going to play an actual defense this week. Talk to me after he plays his defense and throws two interceptions and actually looks like a rookie. Because Mike Pettine might not know much, but Mike Pettine knows how to coach a defense. And he certainly knows how to coach a defense against a rookie quarterback. Apparently, unlike Lovie Smith, who should be fired, by the way, like right now.
Already?
Because
already?
Lovie Smith should be fired because Doug Martin didn't touch the ball for the last three quarters of that game. Lovie Smith should be fired right now. You have no offensive line, and you don't give the ball to your running back. Instead, you throw your rookie quarterback to the wolf. He should be fired right now. And the offense, all of them should be on the unemployment line. But the Cleveland-Tennessee game. Tennessee has very good defense. I expect Cleveland to win this game, honestly. I expect them to win this game. I expect both of those quarterbacks to show some flashes. I expect them both to look bad at certain stretches. But I think Cleveland's going to win this game because Cleveland has more to lose than Tennessee in this game. There's more on the line for Cleveland than there is for Tennessee.
okay? There are guys who understand not only the coaching staff but those players. This player's going to get cut if they lose this game, okay? You got the nonsense with it, trying to kill his kid, Justin Gilbert, who should be on the field, mind you. There's more at stake for Cleveland than there is for Tennessee. Cleveland is the more desperate team, so I expect Cleveland to win this game. But Marcus Mariota is not going to look anywhere near like he did against the Tampa Bay defense, not anywhere near close. They never blitzed him. They never did anything. Talk to me after this game. But I expect Cleveland to win this game. I think that the narrative about Manziel is just that, a narrative. It's not even true. He's not a gunslinger. Where's he been a gunslinger? He hasn't played enough games to get the label gunslinger. This is what bothers me. There's this narrative about these guys, and they haven't played enough games for the narrative to even be realistic. Well, he's a gunslinger. Why is he a gunslinger? Because he's running for his life and he threw the ball away like a rookie quarterback does? That doesn't make him a gunslinger. It makes him a rookie. It makes him a rookie. That's all it does. I think he'll look better. I think he's still going to have some bad plays because he's a rookie. So I think Cleveland will win the game, and we really need to get to Dallas and some other things. But because I'm sick of talking about Johnny Manziel, sick of talking about Marcus Mariota, sick of talking about rookie quarterbacks who haven't done a damn thing, and we dissecting their games like they have a body of work behind them that they don't.
Okay. I'm sorry. Okay. Well, let me push that right on out here. I'll get that out of the way. Interesting things around the Dallas Eagles matchup, and knowing that DeMarco has had a couple of statements, you know how important this game is going up against his former team, but also this being a division rivalry game and how Dallas plays without Des Bryant for the next couple of weeks. Let's start this one off. Chandler, your thoughts on this matchup, what we have, another NFC East matchup for the Dallas Cowboys week two.
But didn't Sirius want to talk about Tennessee and Cleveland?
Sirius, as you say that, I got him back on the line. Sirius, your thoughts within this division quickly before Chandler tried to wring my neck.
You know what, man? I'm not going to really spend too much time on it. You know, I'm curious to see how Marcus Mariota follows up his week one performance, see if there's something that can definitely carry over. I expect Cleveland to win the ball game, unfortunately, but, you know, we'll see what happens, but I'm going to keep moving.
Wow, you like Cleveland, too? Whoa, both of them. Nacho, you like Cleveland or Tennessee? Nacho must be on mute again, right?
Sorry, yeah. I wasn't expecting you to come to me that quick, and I got Tennessee.
Okay, so all right, at least you ain't sipping this dog pound Kool-Aid like these two. Okay, so Chandler, let's spark this one up with the Cowboy-Eagles matchup, week two, another NFC East matchup for the Dallas Cowboys.
Well, I find it interesting that people keep talking about how Dallas didn't run the ball well. Last I checked, Joseph Randle had 107 yards rushing last game. Last I checked, they had, I believe, combined over 150 yards rushing. So how didn't they run the ball well? I'd love somebody to explain it to me. DeMarco Murray ran for 9 yards. Joseph Randle ran for 107, yet the narrative by the experts is that Dallas didn't run the ball well. I'm not Albert Einstein. I do have a degree in engineering, which means I kind of should know some math, and 107 is bigger than 9. But maybe I'm living in an alternate reality. I don't know. DeMarco Murray doesn't fit the offense Chip Kelly wants to run. Chip Kelly threw the ball 52 times last week against a team he should have been running the ball against. Okay? Now, this is a team that he should throw the ball against, and he's going to try to go run heavy, and that's going to be a problem for him. DeMarco Murray, if DeMarco Murray gets more than 50 yards, I'll be shocked. I'll be shocked. I'm saying right now, he gets 50 yards or less, and he puts the ball on the ground twice.
Ooh.
I'm saying it right now. Okay?
I can't have that. I have him in my fantasy league.
This is, well, you know what? You might want to sit him. This is going to be ugly this week. this is a game that is set up for DeMarco Murray to do well. This is a game that is set up for him to really, really, really do something. And I have yet to see him do that in a game that they really needed him to do something his entire career. Game one was designed for him to run up and down the field, and he got 9 yards on 8 carries. He got 9 yards, people, against the Atlanta Falcons. Against the Atlanta Falcons. The Atlanta Falcons, they suck. Their defense stinks. And he got 9 yards. I expect Dallas to win this game. I expect Terrence Williams to go off. And one of the things I think Dallas is going to do is they're going to keep the ball, and Philly is not going to get to run as many plays they ran against Atlanta. But I can't wait to see that offensive line of Dallas just crush Philly.
And that is the scary part of Dallas right now, that offensive line just now starting to click. But the Giants did have an early lead in that game, too, a lead all throughout until everything started to break down late in that game. Sirius, your thoughts on this matchup, you being a Keystone State guy, I know you're not big on the Eagles, but this is a big matchup, especially with DeMarco knowing a good portion of what Dallas offense is accustomed to. What do you think about this matchup and who wins?
You know, honestly, man, this is one of the star matchups of the weekend, in my opinion. You know, when you start to sit there and break this thing down from the F to the no standpoint, you know, the Philadelphia Eagles on Monday night was really a tale of two different halves. You know, the first half, we all saw they really couldn't get right, you know, and then the second half, they turned it on and made it somewhat of a competitive outing and a competitive game. Situation. I expect, honestly, that momentum to carry them into this week when a division rival in the Dallas Cowboys. Again, the narrative is going to be DeMarco Murray playing Dallas, yada, 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 this, that, and the third. And what's going to happen now that we all know Dez is going to miss better part of the whole season, you know, with this foot injury. Who else is going to step up now that you know 88 is not coming back through the door? You know, I mean, Jason Witten has been there, done that. Who else? I mean, are you going to be able to count on, you know, what? Are you going to be able to count on Beasley? You know, Dunbar, you know, a lot of those 152 yards that Dunbar had, a lot of them wanted the backfield on checkdowns. So is Tony Romo going to really utilize that aspect of the offense to kind of, you know, move the ball down the field? So it's going to be very interesting to see what happens. I'm picking Philly to win this ball game for the sole purpose of the fact that I can't have an angry girlfriend 2 weekends in a row. That was bad for Sirius. So I need the Eagles to go and get the dub. So, you know, Miss Sirius can be happy.
Look at this dude being a sucker. That's right, Sports City. I'm saying it right now. He being a softy. Look. Y'all know for years, Sports City, y'all know for years I had to put up with this dude. I had to deal with everything, right? And now all of a sudden his girlfriend is an Eagle fan. And he don't. Man, I'm not trying to hear that. I'm not okay, Sports City. I'm going to be nice. Okay, Miss Simmons or Miss Fiance Simmons to be, you know, I'm coming to the wedding. Okay, I'll go down. Okay. Nacho, your thoughts on this matchup? DeMarco Murray meeting up with his team. Sirius is going for the Eagles because of, you know, relationship issues. And you know, Chandler feels, you know how Chandler feels. I want to see if I can pull you away from Chandler. But your thoughts on this matchup?
Okay. The reason why people said Dallas didn't run well, because they didn't. I don't know where you got your stats from, but the fact of the matter is Joseph Randle had 16 carries for 65 yards. They ran the ball a total of 23 times. They ran the ball a total of 23 times. They passed it 45 times. This is the way they lose football games in Dallas. You put the ball in Tony Romo's hands. And the fact of the matter is this offense did not run at all. They were not able to run against one of the weakest front fours in the NFL. And I know Chandler loves the Giants to win everything when they backdoor in and put everything on Eli's arm. But the fact of the matter is this front four of the New York Giants stopped the best front offensive line in the NFL. So they held them from running and made them pass the ball over and over again. And it didn't work out in the end. They have mediocre linebackers and you know, not up to par corners in New York, like I said. So they weren't able to hold, you know, the only guy that, you know, Tony Romo's hit for like the last, like his whole career for touchdowns, Jason Witten. They couldn't, you know, guard him for whatever reason. But the fact is, this is an Eagles team, like Sirius said, that was kicking it up, ended the game on a high note, even though they lost. And I think this is a team that knows that Dallas can't run the ball, that this you have to have a running back. You know, I was proven wrong, and I know we're going to get told that it's week one in one game, but look at the fact of the matter is, you take DeMarco Murray away from the O-line, he gets no yards. You take DeMarco Murray, you take the O-line away from DeMarco Murray, and they can't block for just anyone, obviously. You need a running back. So,
Nacho, real quick, I got that number because that was his combined yards. That's the number I got. It's combined yards. You're absolutely right, though, but it was combined yards. For some reason, I added his receiving yards in there.
And I would look that up, so when I added it to right now, like about a minute ago, so and I was going to say that was the combined yards, you're correct. And DeMarco Murray didn't even get nowhere near that in his combined yards as well. So the fact is, you know, DeMarco Murray needs that O-line, and that O-line needs a DeMarco Murray type of running back, and they don't have that. They've got a bunch of guys who are backups and perennial injured players, and they can't successfully block for these guys. Now, I'm not saying they're going to miss the hole like Trent Richardson or they're bums by any nature. They're just great secondary players or you know, in Darren McFadden's case, he's just, you know, a great player that's plagued by injuries year in and year out. If he was able to stay healthy and put a full 16 together, you know, we might have a whole different story about McFadden. But that's just not he's going to get injured, and that is evident by how little they played him to try to preserve him all year long. And I just don't think that this is an offense that can live off of Tony Romo's arm because, like Chandler so eloquently put, he doesn't get to play New York 16 times this year. He gets to play him one more, but not 16. So it's just one of those things that he's putting the onus on Tony Romo is what makes this team lose in big situations, in big games, and not make the playoffs. The proof is in the pudding. Last year, they cut down Tony Romo's attempts by 100-plus, and the running back's attempts were up by like 75 to 100. And they won games and have gone farther than they've ever gone or than they have gone in the past 20 years. So, you know, flag or not, they still went to the NFC divisional game and have won a playoff game and looked good doing it. They're not as good as they were last year without DeMarco Murray. And those names mix me up. Sorry, I almost did it. DeMarco Murray, yeah, he needs to be behind them, and they need to have him. And Tony Romo is evident. And the fact that Dez Bryant is not there is going to make it even worse. I know Jason Witten's the blanket. I know he's the go-to guy. He's going to get his catches and do his thing. But he's just not going to be enough when you've got no run game. And I think the Eagles take advantage of that. And time of possession is the hugest thing for the Dallas Cowboys defense. And the fact that I don't think they're going to have a lot of time of possession on offense, and this defense is going to spend more time than it's probably spent on the field in almost a year this week. And the fact that, you know, the Eagles will make them run, that's evident. They're going to go quick. So I think they expose Dallas's defense for what they truly are, and the fact that they're a time-of-possession defense, and they solely live off the fact that their offense holds the ball for as long as they do.
But see, that, Nacho, that's where you're wrong, because the running game, what you're talking about, you got to look at the runners. Joseph Randle is a guy, a lot of those passes that you're talking about were screen passes, bubble screens, things like that. So those aren't passes down the field. These are basically long handoffs. And if you watch the Giant game, they move the ball up and down. They won the time of possession better. They get all of those things. A running game is not just about handing it to one guy 25 times. They use three running backs in that game.
McFadden had carries, Dunbar had carries, Randall had carries. All three running backs also had catches. So if I use my running backs as best suit to his skill set and I keep my offense on the field, which they did against the Giants and which they will against Philly, then, again, my running game is still better than yours. That's what I'm talking about. People say, oh, they couldn't run the ball. They did run the ball. They ran the ball by using the running backs in the positions that fit them best. Joseph Randle is a guy that you're going to run and you're going to pass to. It's kind of like having three Reggie Bushes, basically, which is what, and that's what they did. So why are we criticizing them for using the running backs properly instead of hammering a guy into the line 25 times when that's not his skill set?
Because the guy that they had last year, that was his skill set, and that's what got them to win. The fact that they don't have a guy with that skill set anymore is why they will lose games. And I think not only that, coupled with the fact that there is no 88 on the outside anymore. Who are you scared of? No one. Jason Witten, well, that'll be taken care of now because there's no one on the outside to worry about. You stack the box and you put a safety over Jason Witten. Their offense is null and void. That's what I mean. Now the fact that you have – yes, it is. What can they do? You
no,
can't
it's not.
Round it up. You
do,
just
wait,
said
wait,
you,
wait, wait.
You have,
how did they
have
do
no
with Dez with his collarbone? How did they do last year when Dez was out with the collarbone for four games last year? How many of those four games did they lose?
They had DeMarco Murray. That's the point that you're not listening to.
No.
They don't have
that running back anymore.
They don't have that running back anymore to do what you just said. They don't have a running back that can just hold the ball and go up the middle 25
no,
times.
Now
that's
I throw
exactly
bubble screens. Now I throw bubble screens. Okay, now I throw bubble screens, and I'm still gaining yardage. It doesn't matter how
but
I get the yardage.
But it's not
going to
be as effective. Yeah, but
why
it's
not
effective when you have to spread the defense because 88's out there. He's not there anymore. The fact that he's not there anymore makes almost anything you have as an offense gone. He is that entire offense, to be honest. Yes, that O-line is great, but without him, that offense falls apart because he has to have a double coverage every game. That takes away two players of 11 every game. Now you have all your O-line can work and get a hat on a hat, and nobody has to worry about anything else. Now the fact that you can single cover every wide receiver they have, you can dedicate your whole defense to stopping the run in those bubble screens.
Okay, I'll say this. I guarantee you the Dallas Cowboys rush for more yards than the Philadelphia Eagles.
I think you may be right, but they're still going to lose the game.
So you're saying you're going with Philly?
Yes.
Ooh. Interesting sports. We got an interesting one. And serious one, Philly as well. So we got two for Philly. And Chandler, you're going with the Cowboys in this one.
You know doggone well I will never say anything nice about the city of Philadelphia. Come on now.
Okay. All right. Just making sure. So this sports city, you gotta buckle up for this. Okay. Chandler, I know there was one more topic that you wanted to touch on before we get around in here.
Yeah, I'll be quick, guys, because I got to get to a church thing. But Eddie Curry, Phoenix Suns. Nacho, I hate to do this to you, man. What the hell is your team doing out there? Seriously. Tyson Chandler and Eddie Curry? So you're going to get one guy who can't run up and down the court because he's 700 pounds, and you got another guy to play center who can't score and who can't really defend anymore. So basically he's just taking up a roster spot. Oh, wait, you got Marquise Morris, who thinks he's God's gift to basketball. So they better trade me because I'm somebody. I don't know what the hell the Phoenix Suns are doing, but it's not going well, okay? But Eddie Curry, seriously, Eddie Curry, all of the big men that are available that they could have had. They could have had Kevin Serafin. They could have signed, you know, there's any number of big men they could have gotten, okay? They signed Eddie Curry today.
I don't get it either. And this is a guy that doesn't even play basketball. Matter of fact, I know us in Sports City know this, but I'm going to just say this for consumer purposes. I bet you people don't even know Eddie Curry got a ring and where he got it. And he got it in the first championship with LeBron James and them in Miami in a tuxedo. Did not play basketball because to me, I used to say he was scared of Shaq. And until Shaq left, that's when I said he'll probably come out and play ball. And even when Shaq left, he still didn't come out and play ball. Now hearing this come around the round table in the kitchen, Eddie Curry and Tyson Chandler together again because they were together in Chicago and it did not work when they were youngin'. Now these guys are old men. I want to see how you guys feel about this one. Even though the Suns are trying to load up at the big man position, but is this enough to at least get them into a postseason run, and how far can they go with Hornacek? Sirius, we got your back in here. I'm going to say Nacho for last because he is the Suns fan. Your thoughts on Eddie Curry, Tyson Chandler, and the Suns, I guess, reuniting once again. And Sirius just dropped off. So I'm going to get at you, Nacho, and then we'll shut down shop here at the round table. Your thoughts on your Suns trying to get this big man corral, if you will, together.
You know, they also added, Kyle Casey, Corey Jefferson, Henry Sims, Tariqo White, Jatone Burton, a lot of players I don't know. So Chandler just named another player I don't know. And the fact of the matter is, welcome to my world, Chandler. I really don't understand what this team does from year to year. It seems as if for about 20, 25 games, it looks as if we can do something okay. It looks like maybe we can be in this hunt. We hover around, 9, 10, 8 sometimes, 11, and, give us high hopes. But I don't really understand what this team does. I don't know if it's just reaching for people with rings or I don't know what it is. It baffles my mind that we would even bring – and Chandler said, Tyson Chandler, I am not a fan of that either. The fact that he's not going to be able to do anything other than take up a roster spot and show the people in, the organization what a championship ring looks like and how it feels to actually hold one, because I don't think the Suns will ever, in my entirety of life, ever get one. So, maybe that's it. Maybe that's why they brought Shaq in at a late age. Maybe that's why they're doing this, so they can, just look at a championship ring. I don't understand. It doesn't make any sense to me. We go from a team for the last couple years, and to be honest, it looked like we were going up. It looked like maybe we can start creeping into the playoffs and then, slowly but surely make some noise. I wasn't expecting to do anything in the next, year or two, but at least make some noise in the playoffs, maybe upset someone as a 7 seed, but the fact of the matter is, we're going nowhere fast, and this is a almost year a bi-yearly occurrence for my Suns. We hit the jackpot a couple times with some great players, in the mid '90s, and I know Chandler doesn't like it, but the Steve Nash era, we had some players that won some games, but it never really equated to a championship. So. It's just something we have to deal with here in Phoenix. Our team just does things that we don't understand, and we can't do anything about it but live with it, and it's just saddening, especially to us fans who, we've never seen one and probably will never see a championship parade as it pertains to the Phoenix Suns. I mean, this town, it needs one bad. So it's really sad, though, but I just don't understand it either, Chandler, and it doesn't make any sense to me, and it's just not it's not winning. That's all it is. It's losing. And the Markieff situation, the moment you shipped his brother out, you should have shipped him out. Them two are a mess, beating up people for dating their mother or whatever that whole situation was. As soon as that whole situation should have came out, they should have been gone. I think they're knuckleheads in on themselves, and they need to be together. We all see what he thinks. He's doing this on purpose to get away, to get out. He's trying to, be reunited with his brother. They need each other that much. They need each other in a locker room that much. The fact of the matter is, Markieff's getting picked on now. He doesn't have his teammate, his brother in life. And when it's more of a personal than a basketball thing with those two. And they need to be together. They are each other's crutches. They are each other's, you know, enablers, whatever. They back each other in all wrongs or rights of their lives, and they need each other. So the only reason, the only way he can get back to his brother is to do what he's doing now, and that's what he's trying to do, get traded or released, because he knows he'll walk over to where his brother's at, and they'll almost instantaneously sign him or beg for that trade or whatever. So it is a sad situation for him personally to see it that way, but that's just how it is. And, you know, as a team, hopefully the Lakers are worse.
I don't know. They just cleared Kobe to practice, too. Chandler, anything that you'd like to say towards us before we start to shut down shop? Did we lose Chandler? Did we lose Chandler again? Again, two nights. Okay. Sports City, I'm going to say this about the Suns. I just want to see if Eddie Curry still has it in his tank to give it a go. If Eddie Curry has it, you know, at least 82 games in the season, then I give him some congrats. If he could get out there and ball. I haven't even seen him play ball in several years now. I mean, his name is just a name to me. I thought he's probably one of the biggest guys that was going to be in the paint, and he's not been able to, amount to too much on the floor. However, he does have a championship ring, but he didn't contribute to that team at all in 2012. We did get Chandler back. So, Chandler, your thoughts on this before we start to shut down shop here at the Roundtable?
Nah, I got no thoughts. I'm done. Listen, it was fun tonight, man. I appreciate it. I got to get to church. So a lot of fun, Nacho, Sirius. And Sirius, let me just say this. If you're listening, happy wife, happy life. Do what you got to do to make your lady happy. Don't be listening to Ty. That's why he's sitting home alone with eating ribs and hog maws. So do what you got to do. I'll talk to y'all later.
Listen, what is wrong with ribs and hog maws? I do not know. I do not know. My favorite food is something. That but it sent me with that place by myself. I don't need no help. With that dish, hey, I'm not mad at all. I'm not, so let me get a plug, close out, shout out before we shut it down. Here's the Roundtable.
You know, at Nacho in the Box, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, the good stuff. Some good boxing slated for October. Some good for the rest of this month, November, December. MMA's got some great fights listed at the heavyweight division, lightweight division. We all know the McGregor situation. This is something I wanted to touch on real quick before I get out of here. And I know I dwell into the boxing, and I love that a lot. But MMA is another sport that I follow and I do like. I'm not against MMA by any means. With that being said, Conor McGregor, you know, for all I give Mayweather and his, you know, ridiculousness, I think Conor McGregor and his ridiculousness has swayed me to like him in a way that I probably would not like any other person in the world. And I, in not to sound, naive or whatever, but it has to do a little with his accent. That accent is killer, and the way he says things, it really does, you know, get me. And I feel like, you know, sometimes when he speaks, I want to back him and be like, you know, in his corner. So Conor McGregor, what he said at a press conference, I'm sure it's been out there. I'm sure everyone's seen it. He says he can take everyone at every division. I'm toning it down by 130% from what he really said. But he said, I can take anyone in this division, anyone in any division in the UFC. I'm that good. Talking about moving up to the next weight class, how slow they look, and he's going to dominate them after he does what he has to do to Aldo. I am thoroughly excited to see if he can take on Aldo and beat him. We all know how scared Aldo has been, whether or not you believe he's scared or not. The fact that I think he is, and the fact that I think he's perpetrated the severity of injuries, almost Pacquiao-like, that he has to withdraw from fights, Interestingly enough, he can't withdraw from this one anymore. There is no withdrawal. If he does, Connor will be the ultimate champion. Because Connor holds the interim now. He will be the actual champion. So the fact is, I'm backing Connor. I think Connor does what he needs to do to Aldo, and I'm excited to see when he moves up in weight class to see what he's doing. But, you know, that's a little MMA for today. As it pertains to boxing, Triple G has released some interesting 165 photos, him weighing 165 and sparring at 165, showing that he can go up more in weight and do things. That makes it interesting. That makes it a little more fun to see what happens after his match with Lemieux and then what goes down after that and, you know, who he fights at a different weight class. Maybe he moves up. And we're looking forward to a Triple G Ward fight and ending all this sincere nonsense once and for all. So whichever way the nonsense is, whichever way the fight goes, will be the outcome. But, you know, it's going to be the outcome that one fan base is thoroughly going to hate, regardless of which fan base it is. But that's an exciting fight nonetheless. I know a long closeout, Ty. Thanks again. Great show. Had fun, Chandler. Serious. Everyone's awesome. And glad to see Sirius is back. Hopefully he comes back next week.
He did not say it's Sports City. I'm not saying it. He did not say it. So I did my job. There we go. And hopefully that McGregor-Aldo fight, hopefully I get to see Nacho because I will be out there. Hopefully we can get in the building because that's the day I land. And LV. So, Sports City, y'all sit tight. I've actually been getting word through Twitter that we need to put the food fight together. Twitter's been actually talking about us putting that food fight back together. So, I think I need to get my fight game back in order. Sports City, y'all sit tight. Just pay attention to what we're doing on Twitter, Facebook. I'll put the post up and get this magic going. We're back. I know I got the battery back in my back from a couple of the chefs telling me to get back in this kitchen and start cooking. And that's right, ESPN, stop stealing my line. Because I've been doing this since 2009 with the cooking. Y'all know that. Stop that. Give a brother some credit. Y'all know where y'all got it from. SportsCityChefs.com. Check out the website, the interviews, the blog, the chefs. Be back tomorrow. Gridiron Chefing it up. I got to talk to Nacho ASAP. I keep playing with it. They told me to get myself together. I got to talk to Nacho. Let y'all know that we got the food fight back in order. But we will be getting it back in order one way or another. Got a lot of work to do. But, hey, it's the Burr month, so I'm ready. September, October, November, December. That's when that McGregor-Aldo fight goes down. Y'all already know the slogan on that note. Tell a friend that it's the chefs again. And if they don't know, now they know.
One, two. Check me out right here, yo.
Yo, the sun don't shine forever, but as long as it's here, then we might as well shine together. Better now than never, business before pleasure. P. Diddy and the fam, who you know do it better. Yeah, right, no matter what, be airtight. So when you hear something, make sure you hear it right. Don't make an ass out of yourself by assuming our music keeps you moving. What are you chewing? You know that I'm two levels above you, baby. Talk me, baby, I'ma make you love me, baby. Talking crazy ain't gonna get you nothing but choke. And that jealousy is only gonna leave you broke. So the only thing left now is God for these cats. And babe, you know you're too hard for these cats. I'ma win cause I'm too smart for these cats. While they making up facts,
in the commission, you ask for permission to hit him. He don't like me, him and wild wife, he was with him. You heard of us, the murderer, smooth shady. Been on the low lately, the feds hate me. The son of they say my killing's too blatant. You hesitating, I'm in your mama crib waiting. Duct taping, your fam, destiny lays in my hands. Cat lays in my way. Francis, M to the is H phenomenal. Gun rest under your vest, body abdominal. So I could buy a few cars, then I pick a few flows, so I could pick a few holes. Excellence is my present. Never tense, never hesitate. Leave a nigga bent, real quick, real sick. Wrong nights, I perform like Mike. Anyone, Tyson, Jordan, Jackson, action, rap done. Ridiculous, and I'm quick to bust if my ends you touch. Kiss a girl you touch, in this world I clutch. Two auto, matto, used to call me Fatso. Now
now you call me Castro. My rap flows militant, y'all faggots ain't killing shit. Oops, Chris Stout keeps spilling shit. You overdid it, homes. You in the danger zone, you shouldn't be alone. Hold hands and say it like me, the most shady. Frankie baby, fantastic, graphic, trying to make dough like Jurassic. Parked in, hit the spark kids who start shit. See me, only me, the underboss of this holocaust. Truly yours, Frank White.